Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M. Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Let's talk. G'day, John.
Oh, g'day, mate. How are you?
Good. First caller through.
Yeah, I was just reading about, in relation to you talking about the prison guards and what goes on inside.
What is it that attracts female prison guards to prisoners?
Well, I've sort of got I've got a bit of an insight into sort of the opposite side of it,
yeah,
where I have my young sister's currently incarcerated, and the guards are the ones that bring in whatever's needed, and it's often exchanged for sexual favours at the women's prison.
Now, at this point, don't name the prison. I might ask you a bit later on. Take me through it. What goes on?
If you need drugs, special items, phones are big, but mainly drugs mainly, phones, a bit of alcohol, can usually, all the girls know which guards to approach. It's a badly kept secret inside. The common sort of sexual favour that you'd think that would go on is usually exchanged for the services, plus they're paid for at an inflated rate by members of the family or friends on the outside.
Wow.
So if I wanted to get something in, I could approach ex-guard,
yeah.
Pay them the amount, which would usually be above market rate, or give them the actual product myself. They'd then take it in, and that would be exchanged for, down on bended knee. So, yeah.
So we're talking about blowjobs.
Well, you said it, mate, but yeah. I didn't know what I could say on the radio, but yeah.
We're talking about fellatio, oral sex.
Mainly, 90% of the time, yeah.
Not sexual intercourse.
Not full sex, no. There are some girls will get their hooks into a guard and go sort of a relationship as such.
Yeah.
On the dark, and that will be exchanged for favours. But, more often than not, it's just the quick. And
yeah.
The women guards are also approachable, but then it's more just a cash transaction.
Yeah. I hear these stories all the time about corrupt guards. This is the first one I've heard about sexual favours, because I guess mostly I talk about male prisons.
Well, it goes sort of both ways. You've got I see it as an abuse of power, because one's in a position of power and the other is not.
Of course.
So that's always, I think, an issue, whether it's male, female, you know, a male guard with a female prisoner or a female guard with a male prisoner. That's always an abuse of power, I think. Plus, especially with the women, they're very manipulative, the inmates, very manipulative. Like in a male prison, if you've got a problem with the bloke, he'll smack you in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But in a women's prison, they'll undermine you in vile ways. So, yeah.
Wow.
So a lot of people are no match for these people inside, really.
Mm.
You know, especially women, non-violent offenders. Some of them have had a lifetime of manipulating people and using people. So it's nothing to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your younger sister, how old is she?
Mid-30s.
So, how long has she been in?
I'd rather not go into too specific, just because, it's not as big a place as you think. if someone listening could do some maths and probably figure things out. So, yeah.
She's been
in for a couple of years and she's got a few more to go. So,
do you think she'll come out rehabilitated? That's what I was getting to.
No, not at all.
You think she'll reoffend?
Oh, I don't think she'll reoffend, because she's not really an offender to start with. It's just a horrible set of circumstances, which a lot of the people in there are, you know. You don't wake up in the... Most of them didn't wake up in the morning and plan to be incarcerated by the end of the day.
Mm.
No one, no one wakes up planning to hurt someone or do something horrible unintentionally, you know, but things happen and there's always a price to be paid. So they pay the price. A lot of people do the exact same thing and nothing ever comes of it, you know. If you're not caught, is it really an offence? So... but no, she will come out much worse off. I've already noticed it. I've already seen it.
She's going to come out worse.
Oh, yeah. Her ability to parent and that will be very questionable.
Dear, are you close to her?
Yeah, extremely close.
Do you visit?
Yeah, that's how. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can't. The phone calls are recorded. So yeah, I visit. That's how I.
Yeah.
Oh, and we chat. Because all you've got to do is chat when you visit. You know, you just so you talk and yeah. So she's you, and to survive in there, you have to change who you are. You have to, as she says, it's like being in a massive girls' school 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And you know how bad teenage girls can be. So yeah, the bitchiness and yeah. So she's very much. I've noticed it. Yeah, a massive shift.
Tell me, television shows like Wentworth and Orange Is the New Black. Have you watched either of them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they close?
No, not at all.
No,
not at all. There is no. You have friends and people get close to you and that, but there is no. You've really only got your own. You've got to have your own back. No one will back you up.
Mm.
You know, all the loyalty and that they seem to show on these shows, it's not there. It's not there. You know,
that's interesting.
The common put down in there is enjoy your Tim Tams because the PIU, Prisons Investigation Unit, they'll pull a inmate aside to, you know, do their little internal investigation. They're like the mini detectives in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you get coffee and Tim Tams. So that's the common, if you think someone's a dog, then yeah. Did you enjoy your Tim Tams?
No, really?
Yeah. So
you would think that they would do everything in their power to hide who they were talking to and getting information from, wouldn't you?
It's more of a, you know, a sort of a put down. It's having a go, but yeah, they very much do try to hide it. But you know, you hear stories of people coming back with what looks like Big Mac sauce on their top, and yeah, so yeah, because these are the small things when you're inside that become huge. You know, you can. Get seriously hurt over a chocolate bar.
Yeah. So. I've been reading Will Patterson's book. Did you hear my interview with Will Patterson?
No, I didn't. I'm not usually up this late.
So. No, fair enough. I may replay it. In fact, maybe this morning because a lot of people missed it. He's written this book. He's a bloke who did time in jail for a crime that he never, ever thought that he would commit.
Yep.
He was an ordinary bloke who worked for an insurance company.
Yep.
And he was living well above his means, trying to impress his friends, his colleagues, his wife.
Yes.
And they just had got themselves into terrible, terrible debt. And a perfect storm came along whereby he was really unhappy at work. He thought work was treating him badly. He was seriously in debt. And on his desk one day, arrived a check for $5,000 with his name on it. It wasn't. It was another Will Patterson.
Oh, okay.
And it was a check that didn't arrive at the other Will Patterson's address because he'd moved. And so it was sent back and it was this guy's job, Will Patterson, who wrote the book, was his job to cancel these checks and destroy them.
Oh, and it just by chance it was in his name.
And there it was in his name.
Jeez. So, worried about it, wouldn't you?
So he put it in his top drawer. And he thought about it. He was nervous the whole time. He thought everybody that he spoke to knew that he'd put it in his top drawer because he'd never stolen a thing in his life. Yep. And after 4 days, he took it to the bank and he deposited it. And he said to himself, I can't do that. Tomorrow I'll go back to the bank and try and get the check back and I'll do the right thing. But he didn't. And the check cleared. And he'd gotten away with it.
Oh.
That first check of $5,000 was the beginning of many. In the end, he ended up stealing close to $300,000.
Far out.
And he got caught.
Well, yeah, you usually do.
And he got caught and he went to jail. The book is fascinating. It's called Mr. Ordinary Goes to Jail. But but he talks about what goes on with the prison officers and what ordinary things you and I take for granted that are used for currency.
The currency is mind-blowing. What's worth, it's insane. You would not, and the fights and things, you know, like over a CD, even to have a CD player is huge.
Yeah.
You know, because they're prisoners, they're, oh, sorry.
You go.
I was just going to say, they're allocated, I think it's 80 points, and inside your cell, you're only allowed to have 80 points worth of
stuff.
Possession. Yeah, and like a CD player is, I think, like 15 or 20.
Mm.
So that, and then each CD is a point. So, you know, in no time you've lost half your points on your CD player. And so then you get into I'll get another girl in my unit to hold some CDs, but then they come off her points, so she wants something in return. you know, and it's the same with the drugs. When the drugs come in, anyone who finds out about it straight away says, well, I'm in, I want some, you know, break me off or I'll dog, you know.
Yeah.
There is no, that's what the problem with these TV shows. People do not back you up, and people aren't staunch. They won't keep their mouth shut. You know, people will dog you at the drop of a hat.
If they can get parole.
Parole. It's nothing as big as that. It's seriously, it's like a Big Mac, you know, or, you know, a chocolate bar, you know, a block of chocolate or something, or good coffee. These things that you and I take for granted, that these girls, some of these girls will never see a Big Mac again. So that Big Mac is huge, phenomenal. Like, you, things you take for granted, that's what prison is. They deprive you, that's deprivation of, you know, your friends and family and the little things in life. It's the big things that they accept, but it's the little things that niggle. You know, good shampoo, good hygiene products in there.
Moisturizer.
Yeah, they're all at a premium. You know, makeup, all those things, because they can't have them. So, and the minute it's human nature. Once you say you can't have something, well, I want it.
You want it bad. And a lot of these prisoners have got nothing but time on their hands to work out how to get hold of it.
Yeah, and they sit and stew, especially if, and a lot of people, a lot of the girls, once they're in, they get a band, like the family deserts them. You know, it's very hard. It's a lot of effort that we put in to visit. There's a lot. They do not make it easy.
Tell me, are you searched when you go in?
I'm not physically frisked, but it's empty pockets. You can't wear hooded tops. You have to wear a jump. You know, you can't have hoods. You can't have hats. They go over you with the wand and that. And if there was a suspicion, yeah, I could get pulled aside. But the prisoners themselves are in. They don't show it in Wentworth, but they're in a huge onesie jumpsuit,
yep,
with cuffed, you know, at the cuffs, hands and feet, and around the neck, and then a zip up the back with a cable tie through it, so they can't secrete anything on their body.
Yeah, that's exactly what Will was saying. Yeah, the zipper up the back and the cable tie. Will Patterson, in his book Mr. Ordinary Goes to Jail, also says when you're in there, do not borrow anything and do not lend anything.
No, you do not accept and you do not give favors. You do not accept or you don't give them and you don't take them. Yeah, that's a very common mistake that first time inmates make, especially if a lot of these people come from the square world and they've just, like Mr. Ordinary, made one horrible mistake and that's enough. You know, but they've never been around criminal type people.
Tell me, would you like a copy of the book?
Yeah, I'd read it. Definitely, I'm a very avid reader.
Oh, great! Look, I'll put you back to Nat, and we'll get your address, and I'll send you a copy. Okay?
Yeah, that'd be great. But yeah, thanks for chatting. It's been good.
Okay, I hope your sister works out.
Oh yeah,
it doesn't. You don't sound hopeful.
This too will pass, but yeah, there's a lot of work involved, and there is pretty much zero work towards rehabilitating them, especially in the first 2/3 to 3/4 of their sentence. Because there's such a demand on the very limited resources they have. And a lot of the rehabilitation is done by a prison ministry, which is like a church group that does volunteer work.
Mm.
You know, the government puts very little into rehabilitation. And it shows. I mean, people come out and they just do the same things because that's all they know. No one's going to give them a job. A lot of them come out set up for failure. If you come out without housing, income, all those things, well, you know, and doing jail in Australia, apart from if you can handle going without, it's quite easy to do soft time. Like, I mean, you get your 3 meals a day, you've got a roof over your head, you've got your clothes, you've got TV. You know, they've got a lot more than a lot of people do have.
Yeah. Wow. You've been a fascinating caller, John, if that's your name. And I wish you all the best with your sister and thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Stay there so we can get your details.
Yeah,
I'll send you a copy of Will's book. It's fascinating. It's Peter, g'day.
How you going?
Yes, good, mate. What can you tell us?
Oh, just that it does occur and it's...
You're a prison officer?
In Victoria.
You are a serving prison officer. Tell me what goes on.
It does happen. There is interactions with the males and the females. Yes, it is a bit sad, but we find that some of the females become very lonely and the males are able to coerce and give them the information they want.
So you're talking about a female prison officer having sex with a male prisoner? How can that be when I thought that this prisoner, we were talking about the cop killer, he was supposed to be under guard 24/7, and I happen to know, at least when I visited Lithgow Jail and the AMC in Canberra, that female prison officers were never to be in the on the premises alone.
Oh, that's what happens in New South Wales, I'm not sure, but in Victoria, all the staff are treated as equals, depending on the security levels of the prisons. So you might have one-on-one, just the low-level interaction.
Yeah. So the New South Wales Corrective Services Minister is saying prison officers that have sexual relations with prisoners could face jail terms. Do you think that's fair?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thanks for your call, Pete.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Well, there's a lot to talk to our employment expert, Graham Wynn, about this morning. He joins me now live. If you've got a question for Graham, he's happy to take calls. If you're looking for work, if you're frustrated that you can't find work, maybe you're frustrated that you can't find workers. He's here for you. G'day, Graham.
Good morning, Luke. How are you today?
I'm very, very well. I got a phone call yesterday from a lady called Chris, and she lives in Adelaide.
Yep.
And she gets up at 3 o'clock every morning and listens to this program, silly woman. And she has a catering company.
Yep.
And she gets up at 3 o'clock and she goes off to where she prepares these meals, and she makes dozens of wraps and things and pies and things, and then she delivers them to people in the workplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she said it's a really good business. She reckons she could expand it sixfold if she could find workers. She said she cannot find people willing to get up and work. And she said that every second person she's employed has stolen. Is that a one-off or is that common?
Common, unfortunately. I've had a new client this week, and basically what they do, they go in and after house renovations, they go in and clean up to make sure it's all clean and spick and span, what had you. He had to elude one of his staff members because going into people's homes, he started pinching things. So he had to get rid of him. So it just happens.
It just happens?
Yep. People just do it. They see an opportunity and they take it and think, I'll get away with it. It's just a mindset.
Wow. But she said that the other thing she said was something that you've said before. She is struggling to find workers. She reckons she could expand her business unbelievably if only she could find people, but no one sticks at it.
That is a problem we're seeing across the board with so many industries at the moment, particularly trades or blue-collar workers. If I could find 10 panel beaters tomorrow in Queensland, they'd get a job tomorrow. But
really?
I can't find one.
Really?
Yeah, can't find one. Logan, I've got a huge national company in Logan looking for panel beaters. They can't find any. We can't find any. Other agencies are looking. None of us can find any experienced panel beaters.
Let's have a look at some of these jobs that are, I guess, going begging and good paying jobs.
Oh, what? Huge paying jobs, aren't there?
Okay. What about mining?
Mining is such a boom industry at the moment. It really is, Luke. Everyone thinks it died off, but it didn't. It's just kicked up again so much. And the money they're earning over in WA, we're talking $150,000 to $200,000, these people. But it's hard work, and the problem is you need to be in remote areas.
Mm.
And that's why people don't want to do it. You know, crane operators, drivers, truck drivers, dozer operators, boiler makers, any of these trades, if you've got those trades and you're prepared to go remote in WA somewhere, you can earn up to $200,000 a year. And again, they can't find enough people. I think over in Kalgoorlie, they've got about 1,000 vacancies in the mining sector that they can't fill at the moment.
Also, you sent me an article that was saying cleaning and housekeeping positions are also in need of filling.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because it's hard work and people don't want to do it. So just these basic...
This is still in the mines.
Yeah, but this is just hard work and people don't want to do it. And so all these jobs where you're hands-on, you might get dirty, or it's remote areas, they won't do it. I say, Kalgoorlie Mining, you've got 1,000 vacancies they can't fill at the moment.
Wow.
And the huge dollars are getting paid for these things, huge dollars.
Chamber of Minerals and Energy has called for skilled migrants to fill these jobs. These are jobs Australians don't want.
Correct, and this is now where we get back to this migration. We're bringing all these people from overseas on 457 visas, which the Australians say it's wrong, we shouldn't do it. Well, we've got no choice. if we don't do this, these businesses will shut. We have to bring them in from overseas.
We're talking employment with Graham Wynne from Superior People Recruitment. He has offices all over Australia. What did you make of this story out of New Zealand? A company that's started a trial of a four-day working week, and they've declared it a success.
They're not the first company to trial this recently, and it seems to be going quite well in certain types of industries. And I think if it's a reasonable, I mean, this company in New Zealand employed 200 people, so they can work a roster where there's enough people covering what needs to be done. There was a much smaller company in Tasmania tried it. They only employed like 30 people, but it worked for them because they didn't have a lot of interaction with people face-to-face or over the phone all the time. They were doing much more work behind the scenes. So in those kind of industries, it can work. I know the staffing would love it. Employees would love this four-day week. Absolutely would go overboard on this. But you need the right kind of business to be able to do that. In my business, couldn't do it. Absolutely not. Your business, you probably couldn't do it. So anything where you've got that all-day regular contact with people, you can't do it unless you're a huge company where you can cover it with different shifts to make sure there's always someone there. So it depends on the type of business. But if you can do it, I think the incentive to the employees is huge. They would love this four-day week. They would get a great deal from it. You get much more loyalty from your employees. So I think if you can do it, it's well worth looking at.
Well, they said that the results showed a huge increase in productivity.
Yep.
Employees were happier, saying that their work-life balance had improved.
Yep.
There was a 7% drop in stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are. Maybe more big businesses can do that. A four-day working week. I had a phone call from a bloke just last hour. I know that you sit home and listen to every word.
Of course.
The guy that was a fitter and a mechanic.
Yep.
They do it where he is.
And I've got some clients who have their overnight warehousing staff and what have you. They do a four-day week, but they do 10 hours a night. And that's what your guy earlier was doing. They do a 10 or 12-hour shift, but only 4 days a week. And it works for them.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of this going on already, not so much in the office space, which is what these companies are now doing, but certainly in the warehousing, maintenance, those areas. They've been doing it for a while already, and it just works for them. And I say, if you've got the right kind of business model and the right kind of people in there who can cover the shifts that need to be covered, it's well worth considering because, as you say, the employees love it. And if you can keep your staff happy, they'll stay there.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? Teenagers across the UK in summer right now. But a study using Office of National Statistics data in the UK ranked 20 of the most popular university courses according to the level of salary graduates. And it uncovers that there are some university degrees that are worth pursuing because they guarantee you a high-paying job. But, I guess unsurprisingly, there are also university degrees that you should stay the hell away from, Graham.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, what should you be aspiring towards?
Anything to do with engineering, economics, medicine, dentistry, that kind of business, you will, no problem. Job shortage, high-paying wages, you'll survive brilliantly. Absolutely, that sort of thing. It's the ones which are what we class as more generic, where you will struggle, such as business administration, biological studies, English studies, education. There isn't that huge demand, and the salary, therefore, is not as much. And it's all these people getting these kind of qualifications who are coming out of uni, and there's no work for them. And so that's the problem we're facing now. Too many people getting the wrong qualifications, meaning an oversupply of people. Therefore, the salary is not as high because the employers can pick and choose. The much higher paying ones are the ones where there's a real shortage. I say medicine, dentistry, vets is another one, engineering, anything technology-wise, computer science. They're still high paying because not enough people are doing those courses to get qualified, so there's a shortage of candidates.
All right, if you had a son or a daughter who was about to go to university, and they wanted to do an arts degree, what would you say?
Don't.
You are in the business of placing people in work.
I am.
There was a bit of a drama, a contretemps, and a brouhaha on the Gold Coast last week.
Yeah.
A local councillor has unleashed a scathing attack on a nude cleaning company, but the founder insists no laws are being broken. Gold Coast Councillor Dawn Critchlow has slammed the Bare All cleaning service. In fact, she was being interviewed on the station that takes this program, Gold FM. She described the business, which employs a range of male and female cleaners to carry out household duties for customers in the nude. She says it's disgraceful. It's wrong, 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 she said. Hello, they're not cleaning, Ms. Critchlow said after it was revealed clients were charged $90 an hour for a bikini-clad cleaner or $149 for the total nude cleaner. Mate, the total nude cleaner. Where would they keep their feather dusters, I'm asking?
It's where you swipe your credit card as well.
Where do you swipe your credit card? Yeah. Graham, talk to me about this.
Look, believe it or not, this is a huge industry. Not so much
really?
Australia. Oh, yeah, not so much Australia. But in the UK and America, this is an enormous industry. There are dozens and dozens of companies that do this. We're just cottoning onto it now. They say in all their literature, you must not touch, you must not do this, you must not do that. And no one's ever come back and able to say, well, hang on, this actually happened. So no one's proven it or complained about it. But in the UK and America, it's an enormous business, this. And some people over here now are just thinking, okay, well, this is a market. Let's tap into it as well. There's nothing illegal what they're doing. Whether it's moral or ethical, that's completely different.
Yeah, but if I ask for a totally nude cleaner to come to my house and I'm willing to pay $149 large an hour and you turned up, I want my money back.
You definitely want your money back if I turn up. I can assure you of that.
I know.
But you can select, tell them what sort of person you're looking for.
Graham, is it prostitution?
No.
No, because there's no sex.
Correct.
What award?
There's no law being broken here at all.
What award does it come under?
I don't want to go there, Luke.
What union would you belong to?
Definitely don't want to go there. But they're certainly being paid more than the minimum rates, that's for sure.
Okay. And how much cleaning actually goes on? I just imagine you've got someone completely naked cleaning your room, and what, you just walk around following them, do you? Or?
Most people will just go room to room with them, yes, according to the literature I've been reading through about this one, yes. They'll just follow you around and instruct you what needs cleaning in each room.
Yes. Oh, Terry, can you just bend down and do under that coffee under that coffee table one more time?
And that goes on. But apparently, as long as there's no physical contact, they're doing nothing wrong.
Oh,
legally,
Jesus.
Legally, it goes on. But seriously, in the UK and America, it's huge business, this. Huge business. So we're just tapping into it now over here. But it goes on all over the place.
There you go, folks. There you go. Naked cleaning businesses. They're on the rise, if you'll pardon the pun.
Pardon the pun, yeah.
Graham Wynn, employment expert, thank you once again. You've been informative. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Luke.
Okay, bye-bye. The night shift on Triple M. Amanda has been waiting on. G'day, Amanda. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you?
I'm in Sippy Downs at the university, near the university.
So, say that again?
Sippy Downs, near the university.
Near the university?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
Chancellor Park.
Yeah, but
Sunshine Coast University.
Sunshine Coast. Okay.
Yes. Sorry, sir.
No, you're right. We broadcast to the. It's a beautiful part of the world. We broadcast to the Sunshine Coast through 92.7 Mix FM.
Yes, I didn't realise until tonight that was the case. Sorry.
So you have to tell everybody where we are, okay?
Okay, no worries.
Spread the word. Why are you ringing me?
I've had some interesting jobs in my life, probably the most interesting that one person could squeeze into 42 years.
Yeah.
I heard you earlier speaking about interesting jobs, you know.
Yes.
What
have you done?
I left Queensland when I was a teenager through whatever reasons. Ended up in Sydney and ended up in Rose Hill. And one day I heard this click, click outside my gate. And curiosity got the better of me, and I went and had a look and talked to the bloke, and he was walking these horses.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you can get a job, you know. Anyway, so I went up to this other trainer, and he took me up to meet Mr. Jack Denham.
Jack Denham.
Who was as big as Bart Cummings, Might and Power, Sub-Zero, the Melbourne Cup winners. He was an old cranky bugger, but if I could say
Philanty,
that.
Philanty, yippee-i-o. Fairway, Marskay, Triskay, Ricochet.
I had my fall 21 years ago and damaged 9 discs. So honestly, I'm lucky to still walk, and I'm having more problems now. But what I'm saying is, to have that opportunity, I started as just a strapper.
Yeah, what's involved in being a strapper? Is that the lowest job?
That's like the absolute bottom of the barrel, where you're cleaning up the horse, you know, rubbish, and feeding the horses and putting them on the walkers. And, you know, you start at 2 o'clock every morning and 2 o'clock every afternoon, 7 days a week, no days off. I work 3.5 years without one day off.
Wow. That is, we talked about strapping and working for the stables a couple of weeks ago, and I forget why we got onto it, but it was, yeah, we had a couple of people just like you telling us the story.
I'd like to say that then I went on to work for a man named Tony Karakasanis.
Mm-hmm.
Which we used to call carrots and bananas. But anyway, just because no one could remember his name. And he was okay. And I worked for my foreman's name was Paul Hazlett. He went on to take Maccabi Diva over the line the first time.
Wow.
Down in Flemington. We both left Tony Karakasanis at the same time. I went to Pam Webber and started my apprenticeship. He went to... I was riding within 3 months. I had never, ever, ever been around a racehorse in my life, but I rubbished my way in.
So you became a jockey?
Yes, I only started my apprenticeship when I had my fall, unfortunately. But I had been riding for 3 years.
It is a very dangerous sport. I think horse racing is the only sport in the world where an ambulance is chasing the performers.
Yeah, well, this is the problem I had. I never got compensation for my fall, because if you have a horse and it's racing on in Wyong or provincially on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, you need to have it in work on Sunday. And on Sunday, quote unquote, they leave the track closed because there's no stewards and there's no ambulance. But if you have a horse in work, the trainers, Gerald Ryan, everyone else, I've worked for him too, they'll tell you that you have to, if you don't work the horse on a Sunday, it's not ready for the race on Monday or Tuesday. Work means taking it out to the track and running it around at 4 a.m.
So you start at 2 in the morning.
You start at 2 in the morning and you don't wrap up until about 10 o'clock. And you have to stay at 50 kilos to be a track work rider.
Mm.
You have to stay at 50 kilos. I was picked up because Tony Karakasanis' son, who is now a trainer, Con Karakasanis, actually became a little bit too large to be a jockey. He was training as a jockey when I started there. Paul Hazlett was my foreman and taught me everything I know.
But you'd never ridden a horse before?
No, I'd ridden horses, but just in like a dairy cow paddock in Queensland. But I told them porkies and just wanted to get my job, you know.
Yeah, you bullshitted your way in and you got the job.
Yeah, I got it. And not only did I get it, I got noticed. Tony's son couldn't come in one day, so they asked me, could I track work ride this horse around the track? And they sit up in the stands of a morning between 4 and 8, the track's open.
With the stopwatch.
And... yeah, with the stopwatches, the trainers do, and they sit up there watching their horses, watching with binoculars. And I got picked up like that, you know, but through amazing, incredible balance and stuff I had. And
wow.
went on to what happened was, unfortunately, Tony Karakasanis was charged years and years ago, like I'm talking over 20 years ago, maybe more. He got done,
Hang on, be very careful. We don't want to say things that will get us in the trouble.
Anyway, long story short, Paul Hazlett, my foreman, and I decided we were both leaving the barn straight away. So we did, and he went on, like I said, to work for, I think it's David Hall or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know much about racing. I don't bet. I don't gamble. I've never put a... Oh, yes, I have. I have put a bet in the horse, but a mate of mine did it for me.
I actually boycott it now after the Admire Ratke incident, but... that's just personal. Since then, I've trained seals at Underwater World here on the coast.
You trained seals?
Yes, I did that voluntarily for Malcolm. Hi, Malcolm.
This is up there at Maroochydore.
Yeah, at Underwater World.
At Underwater World, yeah.
Yeah, it has a new name now, so I can't say that I've worked for the new place because I didn't work for them.
But I've been there. When the kids were little, we used to go on holidays there because my ex-in-law, my two ex-brother-in-laws and my ex-father-in-law used to live there. At
which show? Were they running the show where the person falls in the water?
Jeez, it's a long time ago.
I was just going to tell you, it's funny because that's a setup and it's one of us that's doing it.
Yeah, yeah. So you've had some interesting jobs. Training seals. Is it hard to train a seal?
It's called click training, like click training. And so I used all my knowledge from, I did that volunteer because I was so interested. And the manager there was Brendan. When he left, I left again. And then I started on a prawn trawler.
Wow.
20,000 or whatever, 2,000, or I can't remember, it's 2,000 or 20,000 miles up to sea on a prawn trawler. And it was a bit rough for me, so I decided not to continue. And with my back being in the state it was just a bit much. But it was not a hard job compared to horse racing, that's all I can say. At the same time as doing this sort of horse racing job, I raised my daughter, a single parent, as her father is deceased. And then I went on now. I rescued a dog on Black Friday, the 13th, October 13th. A beautiful Siberian husky with three colors in her eyes, one blue, one half blue, one half brown. And wow. I have now been able to, when I picked her up, she was 12 kilos, 7 years old, and curled up in a corner staring at a wall. Now she is such a happy dog. She's such a well-adjusted dog. I quick trained her, and she's almost assistance trained completely now.
Well, aren't you an amazing person, and obviously you have a great affinity with animals. Animals just take to you, don't they?
I think it started when
me,
I was a child, you know.
That tells me, Amanda, that you're a very decent person.
Unfortunately, we had a gas explosion where a stove blew up in my face and I lost my right eye on the 14th of this month.
Oh, darling.
So being investigated at the moment and I'm going through that. But you know what? You can either laugh or cry. And, I'm staying up tonight because I'm going to be like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory and get that Bob Dylan ticket. So that's me.
I don't have a Bob Dylan ticket. But
no, I don't want it from you. I have to wait till 5 o'clock for Mark and Caroline.
Okay.
But also, the sunlight's awfully effective on my eye at the moment. So with all the tests being done and run and stuff, and they may be taking my license and stuff. So I can't really deal with the sunlight. So my life has gone from, waking up early to now having to deal with more of the dark than the light, if that makes sense.
You've been through a fair bit, haven't you?
I have lived 10,000 lifetimes, just like Bob Dylan.
Haven't you?
And I love Bob Dylan. He's my hero. And thank you for listening and thank you for your time. I don't want to keep you up. But I'm awake and I'm just sitting here and listening to you and thinking, well, I've had some bloody interesting jobs in my life. Oh, and I worked on Whale One as well, which is the whale boat.
You worked on a whale boat?
Yes.
What haven't you done?
Not last year. The year before, I was working on Whale One, which was not owned by the Irwins at the time. They sold that after Steve died years back, and it's owned by another man. And not much, actually. I've been a barmaid. I've done everything, cleaning. I'll do anything, as long as it pays money, because I'm a disabled person, and if I need a job, I've never, ever gone for a job and not got it, put it that way.
Well, you are a dynamic person.
G'day, Luke. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very good.
That's the way. Just talking about jobs in mines, mate.
Yes, mate.
I worked over on Barrow Island there for 15 months as a TA. I went over there originally just to work on grinders and all that sort of stuff.
So excuse my ignorance. Whereabouts?
Barrow Island, off the coast of West Australia. Gorgon have just built a big gas plant over there.
Okay, great.
I finished up over there in 2014. Since then, I have applied for multiple jobs in the mine, and I have had either no reply or a reply of, sorry that your application was unsuccessful.
Did they tell you why you're unsuccessful?
No, they just they just send you an email to say that you're unsuccessful. I've gone to the point of I've had my resume supposedly professionally mine spec through proper people to do your resumes, because the mines, evidently, they put your resume through a computer program to look for keywords. So I have paid hundreds of dollars to get my resume done, and I have still had no luck, no joy.
I don't understand it, and yet we've got Seek telling us that there's over 1,000 jobs in Western Australia in the mines, paying up to $195,000 a year for some of these jobs, and they can't fill them.
Yeah, well, I'm on my way to work now. I drive 150 kilometres each way to work every morning.
Jeez, really?
I need the work, mate.
Where's home?
On the Gold Coast.
And where do you drive to?
Sunshine Coast.
Wow. Well, at least you get to listen to me the whole way.
That's right, mate. I leave home at 4 o'clock every morning, and I've always got your program on. I love it.
Yeah, we're on Triple M in Brisbane. Then we're on Gold FM 92.5 on the Gold Coast, and we're also on the Sunshine Coast on 92.7 Mix FM.
Yep, that's right. I've got you on all the way, and it's just when I was on Barrow Island, they told me that when I left there, it would open the door for many other opportunities in the mines and everything like that.
And it hasn't. And you've even got a professional resume together. I don't understand it, Keith. But anyway, I'm sorry you got such a long drive. Why don't you move to the Sunshine Coast?
Well, I've got kids going to school down in on the Gold Coast, and my young fella goes to Air Cadet, so we're just trying to keep him in that at the moment.
It's tough. It's tough. I have a lot of listeners who are up right now on their way to work, and they're in their cars now or their trucks because they have such a long commute. They live a long way from where work is, or work is a long way from home, but that's what they've got to do in order to put food on the table. And it's not good on families. You would know that. You're tired. 150 each way. 150 yep. kilometres each way. How long does it take?
Because I leave home at 4 o'clock, it only takes me about an hour and a half to get there because I beat all the peak hour traffic.
Yeah.
But going home, anything up to 2.5 hours.
And how much petrol a week do you reckon it's costing you?
About $300 a week in petrol plus $60 in tolls.
And and wear and tear on your vehicle. Mate, move your kids to the Sunshine Coast. They'll find other hobbies.
Yeah, well, I've been trying, mate, but you know what these women are like? They like to make sure that the kids are right first.
I totally understand, and you're to be commended. You work hard, and it's a long commute, and I'm glad that we can keep you company all the way down.
I love your show, Luke.
Thank you, Keith. Appreciate it, mate. Bye-bye. 133353 is the telephone number. G'day, Barry.
G'day, Luke.
Yes, Baz, what can we talk about?
Mate, what a load of crap. 1,000 jobs in Western Australia. Well, I've applied for about 500 or 600 of them. And didn't even get an interview. Hadn't even got an interview, Luke.
This is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing a lot of this.
Yep.
Why is Seek telling everyone that there's 1,000 jobs?
Well, I don't know, but Seek makes me sick. What a load of crap. I paid $5,000 in 2012 to get a dump truck ticket,
yeah.
Front end loader ticket. I got an MC license. I got a forklift license, the whole lot, Luke. And you can't get past the job recruitment agencies, and I haven't even got an interview. Not even an interview, Luke.
It doesn't make sense, does it?
Does it? It's lies. It's a load of rubbish. And you know what it is, Luke? It's all designed so that they can bring in the 457 visas, Luke, and then make us look like a bunch of bludgers. That's why I'm out here in the middle of the night. And that bloke just before me, he's in the fatigue zone, Luke. That's a dangerous drive for him to have to commute that far.
Mm.
That's dangerous. That's 80 kilometres is the fatigue zone, Luke.
Is it?
80 kilometres, yeah, to work. 80 kilometres because I've applied for mining jobs in New South Wales. You've got to be living within 80 kilometres of the mine site. Once again, New South Wales, Queensland, Western Australia, doesn't matter, Luke. Oh, you see, I'm over 50, Luke. Can't even get an interview, mate. What a load of crap.
All right, good on you, Barry.
Thanks, Luke. You take care, mate.
You take care too. And everyone who's driving to work now or driving back, finishing your shift, please take it easy. Please take it easy. You don't want to wake up hearing the wheels rumble on that fog line on the left there. And I've been in that position, and I don't have a commute anywhere near you guys. There's a service station that's exactly halfway home for me, and I often pop in and have a 10-minute sleep. So if you are on the roads right now, please just take it easy. G'day, Grant. Hello, Grant.
Hey, how are you?
You're good.
I just wanted to say I'm a truck driver. I'm doing long hours myself. I'm actually doing the exact opposite of Keith is. I'm starting on the Sunshine Coast and driving down to the Gold Coast because there was just literally no work on the Sunshine Coast for me.
What do you do?
And
what's your area?
Truck driver. I'm a truck driver. Yeah.
Well, I got a bloke in Goulburn who's looking for a driver.
Oh, well, I've actually just got a job down at the Gold Coast, and I'm moving down to the Gold Coast fairly soon. But I'm doing the exact opposite of Keith. I'm doing 150 Ks each morning. I'm getting up at 3:30 a.m. to start at 5. I'm actually running a little bit late at the moment. And then driving home in peak hour traffic in the afternoon. And, yeah, it's costing me exactly the same as Keith, about $300 a week in petrol and about $60 a week in tolls. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And it's not healthy. It's not healthy, and it's not good for your family, because you probably get home. You're leaving before everyone's up, and you're probably getting home when everyone's gone to bed. There's got to be a quality of life, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has to be, and that's why we're moving down to the Gold Coast, because it's ridiculous. Mm. The job agencies up on the Sunshine Coast do absolutely nothing, and it's the same with all these jobs that they reckon that are going in the mines. It's bullshit because, excuse my French, but I've tried to apply for them as well, and you get no response or when you do, yeah, it's just your application was unsuccessful. There's no reason behind it or anything. Like, I've got a Cert 3 in transport and logistics, and I've got all the licenses that go with it. So basically the only step up for me to do from here, like, driving-wise, would be becoming a trainer and assessor.
Yeah. I really feel for all of you out there who have to get up while it's dark in order to get to work, because there ain't work near where you live. It's not good. Well, you're making the move. Good on you, Grant. Grant, thanks for your call. Thinking of you, mate. Drive carefully. Adam, g'day.
G'day, mate. What's cracking?
What's crack-a-lacking? I don't know, Adam. I'm just sitting here talking to people on the radio.
Nah, sounds good.
Well, you meet some interesting people.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And you hear some fascinating stories. So what have you got for me?
Mate, I'm just over living in a society that's over-governed, over-regulated, and told what to do every 5 metres you walk. And, just the government's too scared to offend anyone that comes into the country. They don't have a problem with offending the people that already live in here.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that this week, that a number of prominent Australians and prominent politicians, including the Prime Minister, have said, look, PC's gone mad. Well, it's the politicians that have encouraged the political correctness to go mad.
Well, every time somebody raises an issue, then a politician stands up and says, well, we better put this regulation in place so this doesn't happen. I mean, what happened to common sense? Whatever happened to common sense? I mean, take me back to the 80s, for God's sake.
We've got to have safe areas for students to study in now, in case they feel stressed. You can't say workman, or you can't say policewoman. You've got to say person. You can't say I fell down a manhole. It's I fell down a person hole.
It's in the way that sort of thing is taking this country. I feel sorry for my kids. I really do. Well, I work 72 hours a week, two jobs. Why does the government feel that the harder I work, the more that they need to take off me? I mean, that really doesn't encourage me to go and do a good job or work more hours, when all they want to do is stick their hands further into my pocket and take more off me.
What's the incentive to working hard if you're just taxed to oblivion.
Exactly.
What percentage tax are you on?
So first job. So all up, I probably earn 180 grand a year. So I'm falling to the highest tax bracket. And the second job is almost not worth working.
You got a second job?
Yeah.
Well,
so that's all up. So I work six days a week, 72 hours a week. And, on my second job, it's almost not worth working. So, I mean, people whinge that you've got a society full of students coming out of school. They don't want to work. They want to sit on their bum and they want to budge off the dole. Well, hey, there you go. Don't encourage people to work, because all they're going to do is just take more money off you.
Do you know, I wonder, would a flat tax rate work? Let's say we taxed everybody at, say, 15%. Just bear with me on this, okay, because you're going to think I'm mad.
Yeah.
But what if we taxed everybody at a flat rate of 15%, but we raised the GST to 20? So the GST, it's your choice as to whether or not you buy that or that or that. Raising the GST to 20% would help get rid of the cash society, which is ripping you off, right?
Yep.
You with me?
Yeah,
because definitely. Those people getting paid cash in the hand, they still have to buy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So you raise the GST to 20, but you have a flat tax rate of 15%. Because, Adam, I don't know whether you've actually thought about this. I'm sure you have. But did you know that you work January, February, March, April, May, half of May?
For nothing.
For the government?
That's a disgrace.
You get to halfway through May before you start working for Adam.
Yeah, and then the harder I work and be able to, you know what, I can afford to buy a car now. Oh, hang on, I need to pay stamp duty on that car.
Stamp duty. Well,
yeah, it's you've worked hard, so you want to buy yourself something. How about we take some money off you?
Yeah. And you know that I reckon one of the most criminal taxes that there are, and that's taxing people who have the temerity, to want to employ people, payroll tax. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
So payroll tax.
This country does not encourage you to work harder. It encourages you to sit on the dole. It encourages immigrants to come to the country and say, hey, we can sit on our backside and not contribute to the country, and we can get a house and we can get paid a weekly wage to do nothing.
No, well, we have to smarten up our immigration laws. And we talked about that this week. There's pressure from the Prime Minister. Saying, and the immigration minister saying, look, we have to look at who comes to this country and they have to embrace Australian values. Well, they've got to do that, but they've got to do more than that. They've got to obey our laws. If they don't like the way we behave, they can, you know, cough. And they have to be able to speak English. You can't be a migrant and come to this country expecting permanent residency or even at the end of the rainbow, maybe citizenship if you can't speak English. Because if you can't speak English, you can't assimilate.
Well, that's right. And we are one of the few countries in the world that look after everybody else first before we look after our own.
The other rule is you migrate to Australia, you cannot receive any form of welfare for at least 5 years. You've got to be, you've got to start digging the well before you can drink from it.
And you know why that won't happen?
Because
You might offend someone.
Oh, without a doubt, I've offended somebody already. Without a doubt, I've said it a million times. There are people who wake up every morning, and the first thing they think they think to themselves is, "How can I be offended today?"
Yeah.
And if they're not personally offended by something, they'll say, "But I know someone who might be offended. I'll write a letter."
They whinge for the sake of whinging, and if there's nothing to whinge about, that's what they whinge about.
Exactly. What these people need to do is go to a children's hospital.
Yeah, and I'll leave you with one last thing, Luke.
Yeah.
The subject of monogamy the other night.
What are your thoughts? Are human beings meant to be monogamous?
No.
No.
The only thing monogamy is good for is making coffee tables out of, mate.
Go away, you lunatic. Have a good day,
mate.
Adam.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah, see you later, mate. Bye-bye.